on the mic with Mike Peters. My guest this week is Corey David, a Denver comedian who got his start in the Albany scene almost 6 years ago. Corey needed a change and decided on Denver, and it's really paid off. He got past at the Comedy Works and runs a show at Bandit Oak Brewing Company that's going weekly beginning in September. He and Nick Dean also run a show called Interrogation, where they talk to comedians about crimes they committed. That's coming out in podcast form, too. Enjoy this episode and then follow Corey David online. It's the right thing to do. Please like, share, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Sign up to the Patreon. It's just $5. Also, follow Homebrewed Comedy on Facebook or go to homebrewedcomedy.com to see all of my dates. Thanks again. I'll talk to you guys next week. Take care.
Peeling back my sunburnt skin. I'll wait outside your bedroom. I hope they let me in. I'm a little on the spectrum. That's probably it.
Well, me too. So that works. Well, thanks so much for doing this, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just coming from like upstate New York and Syracuse specifically, it's always nice to see like everybody, you know, whoever's working on something, whether it's podcast or stand-up comedy wise, like I still have that like connection with upstate New York. I go back regularly. My family still lives there. I try to work like the Funny Bones when I'm back in town, or the Carlson in like Rochester or whatever. So yeah, man, I'm stoked to be a part of it.
You came up through the Albany scene, right?
Yeah. So I started I was living in Saratoga Springs at the time. Stand-up was like never part of my life at all. I went through a period of time where I really enjoyed writing short stories. And there's this club in Saratoga called Comedy Works, not the one in Denver, but it was right down the street from my house. And they started doing an open mic. And I was like, oh, this would be a great way for me to test out my short stories and get out to like some immediate feedback. And that was a terrible idea. as you probably are aware, storytelling is very hard. Something that I think I'm much better at now, but I was kind of just hooked. I really just enjoyed being on stage. I was already super comfortable presenting in front of a group because I was in sales for like 8 years. So that part was kind of easy for me. And then, just kind of kept doing it. Was in like the Capital Region, Hudson Valley scene. They were kind of adjacent, right? So we helped each other out a lot, did each other's shows. And I moved out to Denver, like it'll be 4 years in November. So I'd been doing comedy for like a year and a half at that point. Was kind of just ready for a change with my life in general, and Denver kind of made the most sense.
Yeah, I remember seeing, I'm trying to think like back, and my brain is, it's weird. Like I remember, if I see it, I'll remember it. And like, then I'll backtrack. I'm like, okay, when did I know this? And like it's definitely a spectrum thing where like, if it's a date, like if it's a show, I'll think of the poster and then I could remember what I called the show back when I gave them unique names. And then I'm like, okay, well, so-and-so was on it. Oh, so was she. So was he. Oh, yeah, it was this date. I could just kind of reverse engineer it.
Yeah.
And I hear your name, and I'm like, I remember seeing posts about your going away.
Oh, okay. And
I'm sure I saw you on posters before, but I never worked with you. I didn't book you. At the time, I don't know how much I was booking out of Albany.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there was a whole lot going on independent-wise in Syracuse at that time.
Well, I'm in Binghamton, but I get up to Syracuse. But yeah, same thing.
Yeah, sure. But just in that whole like upstate New York like corridor between like Syracuse and Rochester, I wasn't super familiar with anything that was going on. Number one, it was kind of a drive, right? And there was enough kind of going on in the Capital Region scene. I mean, I don't know what shape it is in anymore, but I mean, realistically, we had two good open mics a week in the Capital Region. You had one in Albany at the Lark Tavern on Mondays, and then the Comedy Works had theirs at, I forget what night of the week it was. They changed it a couple times, but those are really the only two good ones. I was very fortunate when I first started out because I was in sales and I was the upstate New York territory manager for a brewery. So I had to go all over upstate New York anyway for my job. So I could strategically put myself in places where I knew that the Hudson Valley, for example, like their scene had kind of the same numbers, like two good mics a week, right? So I could do Lark on Monday and then drive down to Orange County or whatever on Tuesday or Wednesday, do their mic, and I get a hotel for free. My gas is paid for because I'm there for work. and then just go like work the area the next day. And then if there's another good one there on Thursday or whatever, stay down there and do that one. So I could really kind of high spot, if you will, just the whatever few good, quote unquote, good mics we had available to us at the time.
Yeah, I only went to one mic, and I don't know if it was Lark. It could have been. It was Monday. And I arranged the podcast to, I drove out there. It was before I knew what Zoom was and anything. So I was putting a lot of miles in my car.
Yeah.
Probably unnecessarily. And I set up two interviews at a library in Albany. And then I hit a mic on Monday. Mm-hmm. And it was a fine mic. But like, I think like halfway through my set, there was a disabled guy. He was mentally handicapped.
Okay.
And he started making noises and like yelling during my set. And there's nothing I could do at that point. I can't, you know, ask his mom.
No, you tell him to shut the hell up. We don't like hecklers, man. You got to put them in their place. Doesn't matter who it is.
Treat them equally. But
yeah,
no, so I got out of there and I'm like, you know what? It's fine. It's a fine experience, but I never had the urge to go back. And then the pandemic came around right around then. So I don't know what Albany has. I know Travis Steele does a lot of shows and Jennifer McMullen is working a lot. So mm-hmm. I know the key player is Dan Guerin, but aside from like the independent stuff, I don't know much about anymore.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so Kayla at the Funny Bone in Albany was always great to me. She was like, she gave me it was the first club weekend I ever did. Probably didn't deserve it at the time that I got it, but I got it. And it was a great experience. And I just learned a lot from working a full weekend, kind of some of the etiquette with the staff and learning how to host. And I didn't really get that close with it was Lori at the time, who was the GM at Syracuse. Yeah. And she and I just kind of like hit it off. This ties into, you'd said before the show, we talk about like my worst set ever.
Yeah.
So the way I got into that place was my worst show ever. I don't know if you want me to share that now.
Yeah, go for it.
All right. So, I mean, as you're kind of aware, when you're first trying to get into clubs, like you'll take whatever gig they offer you, right?
First of all, how new were you?
Pretty, like I said, this was probably closer to like a year in, okay. Something like that. And I was living in Saratoga, which is still like 3 hours away from Syracuse, right? 2.5, 3 hours, somewhere right around there. But I'd like hit up Lori before because I, you know, visit my parents and stuff however frequently. And I was like, hey, you know, I'd love to be able to do a guest spot or whatever, right?
Did you email her?
Yeah, I think it was via email, if I remember correctly.
She was notorious for not responding to emails.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was like, she might have had my phone number, to be honest. I can't remember right now, but anyway, she hits me up on like a Thursday, right? And she's like, hey, can you host tonight? We need somebody to host. And I was like, yeah, for sure. The issue was that it was a terrible blizzard that night. Horrendous. Like a couple, like at least a foot of snow. And I was like, I don't care. I'm going to get there, right? So my friend came with me, took 4 hours instead of 3 because of the conditions. And we get there and there's like, they have like 12 or 15 tickets sold, right. Something like that, right? So we're all just like, oh, we're probably not going to do the show. We do the show anyway. So, and if you've been into any of the Funny Bones, you know that they're huge rooms. Yeah. They're cavernous. You know, this one in particular is like 300 people. So we have about 12 people in a 300 person room, and they didn't even see anybody.
Oh, no.
So they just let everybody sit where they wanted, right? And the cherry on top is that my mom also came to the show because my parents are super supportive. But anytime I'm back in Syracuse or I'm in Rochester or something, they always come out to like at least one show. So my mom and my friend are sitting at the first table, like right up front. And the show is going about as well as you would even anticipate it going, right? I'm hosting. I'm terrible. You know, I'm like as good as I think I can be at the time, right? All things considered. And I can hear my mom telling my friend during my set, that's not how that happened. He's a but nobody else can hear it. So like, I'm just listening to my mom basically just like destroy my set while I'm standing on stage. And if I was a better comic, you know, at the time, maybe I think I should have or would have been like, all right, everybody, this is what's happening. This is my mom. She's trashing me right now. Like, and none of you can tell. And it was it was definitely one of the worst sets I've ever had, but it was one of those ones you're like, I don't know how to make this go right. So I'm just going to do the job and hopefully, hopefully that works, right? So, and then I started working there like more regularly after that, but it was kind of crazy.
What do you tell your mom afterward?
I don't know. I mean, I think she gets it. You know, she just understands that, like, you know, it was a blizzard. It was a Thursday. I mean, I was giving her a hard time, you know, like just razzing her a bit because she didn't do anything like mean, you know, she wasn't like full on like heckling or yelling or whatever. But I was like, Mom, you can't do that. Like, I just wanted to make sure your friend knew that you weren't telling the truth or whatever it was. She doesn't know. Like, she doesn't go out to a lot of like live performance things, you know? So like even like a concert etiquette, or definitely not a comedy show etiquette, is something she's not really even like aware of.
And I'm sure Lori, was she there to watch?
I think so. I mean, she, especially on Thursdays and Sundays, the GMs are usually pretty good about, you know, watching, especially for like the host sets or whatever, because you're usually trying, you're kind of like auditioning for that club, right? So yeah, nothing like came of it that I remember afterwards that was just kind of like crazy, that was negative or bad or whatever. If anything, like I said, I did keep working there. And then Lori was like really good to me after that, before I actually moved out here. And coincidentally, like when I first moved out here, I really wasn't getting like a lot of gigs or whatever, which I, you know, understandable. So I was going back home every 3 or 4 months, I'd say, because I could literally just text Lori and be like, hey, I'm planning on coming home this weekend. Is it cool if I work? And she would just be like, yeah, that's totally fine. So I would like come home. My mom picks me up from the airport. I work all weekend, crash at my parents' place. Yeah. So I was going back home pretty frequently at the beginning, like right when I moved out here.
That's great. I know every guest spot I got, I would talk to Lori to get it. And she'd be like, yeah, okay. And she didn't say email me a video, but she gave me the guest spot before she watched it. So I was like, all right, you probably just, you know, formality.
Yeah. But
every time I would go there, I'm like, okay, cool. I've got my 5 minutes. I do pretty well. I think the second one I did way better than the first, but like I would go back and talk to her and she's like, oh, I was busy. I didn't watch. I'm like,
ah, dude, come on.
And it's only an hour and a half drive for me. So it's not really that big a deal, but I'm like, oh, so close.
Yeah. Right.
But no, she left. I think when they shut down the pandemic, I think she left during that.
Yeah. Yeah. She just wanted to be like, ultimately Lori's awesome. I love her. We still talk occasionally just via text message or whatever, just to check in. She wanted to move back home and be closer to her family. And sometimes I'll see her post Instagram pictures and stuff. And I'm just like, oh yeah, you made the right choice. Like, you're happy. You know, she's got like, you know, her kids running around, not running around, but like they're own adults, but like she's just living. Yeah. She's living like her family life now. And I'm just stoked for her that she's in that position.
Where are your parents now?
So they're still in Baldwinsville, New York, in the house I grew up in.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
70 near Abbott's Farms. And it's the old house that we used to smoke weed in the basement, play beer pong all the time, terrorize the neighborhood. We developed quite the reputation between my brothers and I in that little cul-de-sac of the world. And yeah, they're still there. My older brother's in Rochester, so I'll crash with him for a few days. And then my younger brother and his wife were in Oregon, so I was going out there quite a bit to hang with them. But they actually just went like full van life. So they're back home in the Northeast right now, kind of working on the van and hanging out with the folks.
I spent, I think, 3 years, like 3, 4, 5, 4, 5, 6, something like that, in Liverpool.
Okay, yeah.
And
I mean, it's like, it's a fine part of the world. You know, yeah. We were pretty fortunate. We grew up in just like suburbia, and we went to a pretty good school, went to Baldwinsville High School. And all things considered, fine, right? But I mean, that's the thing about living in the burbs that I was kind of alluding to before, is you just get bored. So I started smoking weed when I was like 12. I never really got into alcohol until I was like 18 or anything, but I was taking mushrooms when I was like 14 years old. And then, yeah, just like nothing too crazy, but just kind of terrorizing the neighborhood, you know, just like egging houses and lighting bags of poop and putting on people's mailbox, or putting a turd in the mailbox and lighting and putting a firecracker in it, pool hopping, like all that kind of stuff. And one of the shows that I run out here in Colorado, and we like tour with it occasionally, is called The Interrogation. And it's a true crime storytelling show. So we basically have comics. They tell a story for 10 minutes about a crime that they committed or they've been a part of or witnessed. And then my buddy Nick and I were dressed like cops the whole show. And we just play bad cops, which are just all cops, really. And then we set them down at a table, and then we in the audience like interrogate them about the story afterwards. So the reason I brought that up was because I've had to kind of start rehashing all of these dumb things that we did when we were kids that we really weren't like hurting anybody, right? So it's not like as much of a crime as like anything, but I've had to like, I just told that story about the mailbox thing and a pool hopping thing at our show on Sunday. So it's been funny, kind of like I've been talking to my brothers and I'm like, do you remember like any other dumb things that we did? I'm like, oh yeah, okay, never mind. We got a laundry list now.
Yeah, you've got vandalism, brick and entry, possibly trespassing.
Yeah, definitely. Lots of fire. Something about teenage boys and poop is like incredibly funny and fascinating. So there's lots of those.
Guy, I'm 39. It's still hilarious.
Still funny. And the honest truth about our art, if you will, of comedy is that there will never be anything funnier than a well-timed fart. It gets belly laughs more than the very thoughtful woke joke that I've been working on for a year.
I just thought today, like I was leaving Taco Bell and I farted and I'm like, the perfect crime is farting at Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Whatever. Like it's a recycling plant for methane. Like,
yeah, only thing that would have been funnier was if you had your window down and then like the person in the car next to you heard it, you know, or it was like so bad that like it was still lingering when somebody pulled up next to the drive through like that. But that's just fun. That's just
right. Like I lived in a neighborhood with our elementary school up top. So like right outside the elementary school was the woods. So I remember, I think it was like sixth grade, my buddy Jeff and I, we took all of our, like we cleaned out the desks and the lockers or whatever it was. And we put everything in a pile in the woods and we burned it.
Yeah.
And then we tried to pee out the flames and it didn't quite take.
Okay.
So what we did was we ran.
Yeah, of course.
And hope for the best. And the woods are still there. But like to think about that, like we were shitting ourselves.
Oh, man.
Like,
yeah.
Like, oh, the whole school's going to burn down. The whole neighborhood.
Man, I wish I could count how many times I almost lit an entire building or a house on fire.
It's crazy. And I remember the only time we really got caught for anything was we put a whole bunch of wet leaves in somebody's mailbox. Mm-hmm. And this, we might have been maybe second grade. And this woman came outside just crying because we must have done it before. And she's like, don't you understand what this does? And I have to deal with this every day, whatever she said. And we're like, oh, maybe we shouldn't, like maybe what we're doing, we're assholes.
Yeah, maybe we're dicks. Have we considered that? Like, no, of course not. We're 12 and just like, we got tons of testosterone and enough cum to come out of our eyeballs. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, we don't know what to do with ourselves. We can't even possibly empathize with other people when you're 13 years old. It's insane.
We're stupid too, because I remember one of my favorite stories of my buddy is we were coming down again, third, fourth grade, coming down from school. And I saw a yield sign just kind of like hanging out. And I think like it was on its last screw and I took it off and I started walking away. And this guy yelled, I mean, he's probably, you know, a dad. And he said, hey, where are you going with that yield sign? And it's a fucking huge yield sign.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what yield sign? It's in my hands.
Yeah, because, of course.
You know, the ones in your hands that go, oh, this? I don't know. And I ran away. And I was like, the audacity.
You're a terrible criminal.
8-year-old.
Yeah, you're a terrible criminal.
Yeah, it was awful. But I don't know. Like, I often wonder, like how much different would my life have been? Like, how much different would your life have been had you not grown up in Baldwinsville or the suburbs?
I don't know. I mean, I've been fortunate that I have had a lot of really amazing experiences traveling and living in different cities and stuff. So I've lived in small towns. I've lived in big cities. I think if I were to have never left a small town, that would have been a fairly negative experience for me. But I don't know. Cause I mean, I like being in a city now, and I lived in Boston for a little while, but I don't know how, like, I can't necessarily say how it would influence me, like, as a kid. I probably would have listened, to way more Wu-Tang when I was younger, then for sure, you know, probably would have, like, hung out on stoops a little bit more. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, like, because I still think I would have gotten into some trouble, like, no matter what, right? Because I've always just been that kid that was just, like, I hated authority, hated being told what to do, was always trying to push the envelope in terms of what I could get away with before I actually got in trouble or before I could get caught. So honestly, if I was in the city, probably arrested. I probably would have been arrested so many times just for being a dumbass.
So when did you start doing comedy?
So like I said, I've been doing comedy for about 5 or 6, if like you want to count COVID year or whatever. So right around there. And I just knew like I wanted to do, I really enjoyed doing it. It's one of those things that as soon as I started and I started getting a little bit better, it was just, I couldn't stop, you know, it literally consumed my entire life. So when I was ready to make a change, I knew I wanted to move to a bigger comedy scene than I was in, but I didn't think I was really ready for New York or LA at that point. And I also didn't really want to compromise all the other things that I like to do with my life. Like I've been snowboarding since I was 12 years old and I mountain bike a lot. I do enjoy camping from time to time and I just didn't want to get rid of that stuff. So it was kind of between Denver and Portland and I'm glad I picked Denver. Portland's cool. I like visiting there. They have some great shows. There's some clubs there, but they're a little farther removed from the mountains. And I really do like the Denver scene quite a bit. So it's been a really great experience just being here because there's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of really amazing comics here that we can, you know, myself and others can like look up to and learn from. It kind of pushes you to be way better.
How old were you when you started?
Like 28. So I'm 33 now. And I started late. Like I did a lot of different things in my life, but the thing I did the longest to like with the same level of intensity was I played rugby for 8 years and I started in college. At the time I was basically just snowboarding, skateboarding and smoking a ton of weed. I was smoking cigarettes at the time. And so I say that because I really wasn't in like great shape. And then a guy that I worked at the ski club with at school, he played rugby and he was like, you should come out to the team. I like wrestled in high school. So he was like, wrestlers make good rugby players. Whatever. So I went out to one practice and we did like a lap around the field and I left. I just like left. I just like walked away. But that summer I started working out a lot, stopped smoking weed, stopped smoking cigarettes. And then I started playing really seriously. I got pretty far, long ways, man. Like it took me like, I played like for the college team, obviously, then played for Buffalo Men's Rugby Club after that, and then played for this great club called Mystic River in Boston. And then I played in Saratoga Springs when I moved there. We got pretty far, man. We made it to a national championship with Saratoga, Northeast Division I champs in Mystic River, Midwest D2 champs with like Buffalo. I got to travel all over the world. But I kind of like hit my peak because like I got invited to the Olympic Development Academy for the Rio Olympics and super stoked about it. Right. Like, and I'd been a stud on like every team that I'd ever played for. And then I got there and like, I was the fat kid. Yep. Like I was the slowest one. I was the most out of shape, which was insane because it was always the opposite, like on all the teams that I'd ever played for. And I just kind of saw my peak. And I was like, I'm not going to be these guys. Like, that's why they make the Olympic team. Like, there's still people like just because you're good, there's still another level of good on top of you. I mean, similar to anything else like comedy, right? Like, no matter how good you think you are and like no matter how good you get, there's always going to be some people that are just like, that's why they're exceptional. You know, they can tap into something that maybe you can't or we can't. So I was there and then I developed this injury in my leg that was going to put me out for like 3 months. So at that point in time, I was just like, all right, I'm kind of done with rugby. I did this for a long time. It was amazing. And that's when I started doing stand-up, like, cause I just needed to fill that void in my life. I'm really restless. I hate sitting around and not doing a whole lot. I'm productive to a fault. So stand-up was great because I could just write, perform. And I could actually see progress based on the amount of work that I was putting in. That's kind of how it got started. And it's been that way ever since.
I assume you're pretty competitive then.
No, not really. I mean, I used to be really competitive when I was a kid. And then as I got older, I started to get a little bit more zen into my life and not let that kind of stuff affect me. So when I play sports now, like pickup or like I said, I went golfing earlier, like I don't care that I'm terrible, you know, whereas I used to be like mad. I used to get like really mad about that kind of stuff. I just learned to mellow out really. And especially with comedy, you know, people tell you all the time, it's you're running your own race. Like you can't compare yourself to other people. So if I ever don't get anything, like if I don't get a festival or if maybe I don't get a show that I thought I deserved or something like that. My first thought, even if it's, you know, it's impossible to not have like any kind of bad feelings about it, right? Or feel a little bit angry. But I just immediately say, tell to myself, well, I just got to get better. Like that just means I wasn't good enough and that I need to put the work in. That's always my answer.
See, I'm okay like playing basketball. Like I've always been okay at basketball. So if I suck, whatever. But I was good at baseball. Now, when I play softball and I make an error or the team around me sucks, I get pissed. And I can't find a way to turn off that competitive nature during softball. That's the only thing. And comedy too, to an extent, but like comedy's harder than softball. Like, yeah. Like it's so fucking easy to back up the throws. Why aren't you backing up the throws? Why are you throwing from right field to catcher? You can't make it. First of all, your arm's not that good. And I'm the first baseman. Cut it off. Come on. Yeah. So it infuriates me. So the fact that you can play competitive rugby as high a level as you got and then be like, whatever, is impressive.
Well, first of all, I would say you should probably work edibles into your life a little bit more. And second of all, I guess it just depends on the expectation, right? Like if I'm just playing like a casual game of something with somebody, then there's no reason to get mad, you know, but don't get me wrong. Like I would get like pretty fired up when I was playing rugby because we were competing and it was really more just kind of like holding everybody else to a standard because, you know, if you aren't doing your job, that means I have to do it. And if I'm doing your job, then that means I'm not doing my job. So it was really more of just like kind of guys getting at each other during the game. Like if you felt like somebody was slacking a little bit, but I was never much of like a yeller. Like at the beginning of a game, like a lot of times people will get like, they'll get super bro-y and like really aggro. And they're like, I'm going to get the first hit. Like right before the kickoff, first hit, they're yelling. And I'm usually the guy that's like kind of in the back, just kind of going like,
yeah,
you know, I'm just kind of swaying around a little bit. I've got some like hip hop song in my head instead of like death metal, which I also like death metal, but that's just not my approach to competitive, like being competitive, because in my opinion, the more loose and relaxed you are before you start playing, the better you're going to do. Cause I just feel natural. My head's pretty clear. And if you're coming at it like super aggressively and super angry, then I just don't feel like you're setting yourself up to play your best, but that's just, everybody's different. You know, some people have to some people that have to get like real amped up before they go on stage. And I'm like, you know, I'm the best on stage when there's a couple people that were kicking it like before the show and we're all just shooting the shit together and we're all just goofing around with each other. So then we're like already funny before we get up there. And like you transition right from having a silly conversation with your friends to like, oh shit, I got to go on stage. And you're already kind of in that energy.
Yeah, it's like you already have that momentum worked up. It's like you're doing a relay race and then you already are in a sprint kind of before you take that baton.
Yeah.
You're not starting cold. Yeah, I've never needed to like put headphones on and get in my mental space. Now, there are stats where people have probably been like, maybe you should have tried that. Like maybe it would help.
Maybe.
The one time I had a shot before going on stage, I was convinced that I was going to forget every joke I made. Ever wrote.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So like I have no problem drinking a beer or two before I go on stage, but usually that's it. And I don't smoke pot at all. So like, and you're probably right. Maybe I should, but you know, it's just not, for me. I'd rather be in a clear state, but I like joking around beforehand. Now I produce a lot of shows, so I can't joke around as much because I'm setting everything up. I'm taking tickets and everything. So
yeah, totally.
It complicates things a little bit, but yeah, if I'm featuring on a show and I'm just fucking around with a headliner, great.
Yeah,
that's fine. That's my zen, where it's like, okay, well, we just did a show in fucking Plattsburgh, New York, and nobody knows us, and we're the talent because a comedian has never been to Plattsburgh. You know, let's rock. It's fine. But I think it's, if you need something like that, that's fine. It was never like that for me as an athlete. You know, okay. I wanted to play catch enough so my arm was loose, and that's all I needed.
Yeah, you just got to warm up differently. One thing that I do is, so I don't really smoke weed very much. It actually gives me like anxiety, like not like normal anxiety either. Like I left an oven on. It's like I left an oven on 20 years ago and I'm personally responsible for global warming. You know, like if I take a hit off a joint, I'll have a panic attack because I forgot to walk a dog I don't have. You know, like it's not great, but I do really, I like mushrooms a lot. I've taken like psilocybin pretty regularly for like the past couple of years, like microdosing and stuff. And I sometimes like to trip a little bit, like when I'm on stage, like not a lot, just like, and not for long sets, not for like 25s or 30s, but for like a 10 or maybe even a 15 minute set. I like to trip a little. It's fun. And it's just enough to make you feel silly, like just enough to kind of like feel a little goofy, like it'll feel a little bit more in your body. Like it's okay to like roll your shoulders around or like kind of be a little bit more of a character on stage. And I don't really, cause it's not really that intense. I don't really, you know, I don't have a ton of trouble like remembering the material or whatever. So that's just kind of one of those ways that I like to loosen up a little, but I usually like to have like a drink or something like before I go on stage, just to kind of just, I like drinking. So yeah. I'll have one or two before I go up on stage just for fun.
So you're a year and a half on stage and you decide, okay, well, I'm going to Denver.
Yeah.
The nerve. I mean, what gave you that confidence to say, okay, well, I can move to a bigger scene and be fine here?
Well, honestly, it was really just more of like, it was kind of something that just had to happen in the sense of, so I got fired from my job that I had back home. I was going through a really bad breakup. I was just really in need of a reset. You know, I needed to move. And I already knew I liked comedy. So I started thinking about, you know, what are other good comedy scenes? So I knew the move was happening for other reasons, but comedy, I might as well have just factored comedy into the equation because it's something I like to do and something that honestly I want to do for the rest of my life, right? Or at least like I want to get as far as I can with it. And that was, again, why one of the reasons I picked Denver. So like, yes, I want to take comedy more seriously, but I also just want to be in Colorado. Like I really like being here. It's a really awesome state. It's super fun. Basically I always say like everybody moves out here to like live their best life essentially, because you can kind of get into whatever you want to, you know, we have the mountains here, which make it super easy for like fly fishing, biking, hiking, skiing, snowmobiling, if you're into that, right? And then I live in Denver, and that's a big city. You know, it has all of like the amenities that you would want. And apparently people really like weed. So there's dispensaries everywhere you go. It's insane. It's like nobody had a good business idea before weed was legalized. And then everybody else, now they're all just like entrepreneurs of the year. It's kind of weird, to be honest. But there's a great craft beer scene here. I'm a little bit more into that. Honestly, it's like one of the top five. Yeah, it's definitely one of the top five like comedy cities in the country. So it just kind of like made sense.
My friend Carrie was living in Denver for a little while, I think 3 or 4 years. And she said like everybody in her apartment complex would go upstairs onto the roof. And she said it was basically like the weed was just like craft beer. Like yeah. Everybody has their different strands or blends or whatever they are.
Oh, yeah.
I'm that naive. But that's it. Like, oh, try this, try this. This does this, this. And it was probably just as annoying as craft beer lovers.
Yeah, a bit.
And I am one, but like, I'm not smart enough or into the beer enough to like say, oh, this has this sort of grain and this is why there's a bouquet of this.
Yeah.
I just like the taste.
Well, I got really into beer. I worked in the craft beer industry for 8 years. I'm a what they call a level 2 certified Cicerone, which it sounds stupid and it is kind of stupid. I say I'm a Cicerone, like most of the time that's how it's spelled. So I just tell people that's what it is. And it's basically like the beer equivalent, like wine sommelier. I had a really successful craft beer podcast a couple years ago that just fizzled out because my partner and I just like, you know, just one of us, we just kind of had to part ways.
Yeah.
And that was called Rotating Tap. So if anybody wants to go back and listen to episodes, like can do that or whatever, but I'm still just like very involved, like in the beer scene. Like I run shows at breweries and I'm kind of like beer adjacent out here, but with weed, I have no idea. Like literally none. My old roommate used to manage a dispensary and our house looked like a dispensary. Like there was just containers of weed all over the place.
Jesus.
So much so that if, you know, upstate, like New York Corey or like 18-year-old Corey would have been like, we live in a drug den. Like this is weekend. We're going to get in trouble. Like if anybody comes over here, like we're going to jail for like hard time. Like we're in a gang now. Like that's how... That's how much weed we just had laying around our house. And she never had to worry about me. She was always like very generous with it. But I'm like, yeah, if somebody comes over and asks for it, they can have some, but like, I'm not going to take it. Because if I smoke any of this, I'm just going to have a panic attack on the couch while I'm trying to watch The Wire. Like, it's not fun. Right. It's not fun.
I got a buddy, Seth Ruddick, who's a comedian. He's out in Jersey now. And that dude, I have to hide my pills when he comes over. Mm-hmm. So you feel like you're an ideal roommate.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how long did it take you to get past the Comedy Works?
3.5 years.
Yeah. Worth it?
Yeah. Yeah, man. So it's kind of like, so Comedy Works has been like, that was also one of the major factors into why I moved out here. I mean, if you ask most people, you know, it's a top 5 to 10 club in the country, right? And it is they have two clubs. There's the Downtown Club and the South Club, which is a little bit more in like the, like an uppity kind of suburb area, like a little more like a rich upscale part of town. The Downtown Club specifically, man, if you have a good show in that room, is the most electric feeling that you will ever feel in your entire life. It's the reason we do this. You know, for all of the bar gigs, for all the hell gigs, for all the ones where nobody came and your mom's in the front row heckling you, it's everything. So what you do is they have a thing called like New Talent Night on Tuesdays. And that's kind of like a local showcase, basically, where you have to sign up every week and then you work your way through these tiers, essentially. So your first time, you do a newbie set. It's 2 minutes. And then after that, you're automatically promoted to C. C sets are 3 minutes. And then you have to do C sets until the powers that be there decide that you're ready for a B set. And then Bs are 4 minutes. And then they do this thing. It's kind of like an unspoken tier, but it's the only one that kind of makes sense to me. It's called the B+, where they get to host New Talent Night. And B+ is typically where they start to like give you looks for like getting promoted to the weekend list, which is A and pro. And then the B+s get to do 7 minutes and you're kind of doing all the, hey, welcome to the show. Who's been here before? You do that stuff up top. Right. So I've been doing New Talent Night, like as often as I could, however often you get up. Sometimes it's like, you know, 4 to 6 weeks before you get up again. And I think like newbies right now, it's like, you have to sign up like every week for like 2 months before you actually like get an opportunity to do 2 minutes and see how it goes. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, like I just tried to do my best like every time I was there. And I also like, I'm really active, man. Like I'm a full-time like working comic. Like I still have to work a day job because it's not enough money yet to pay my bills. But you know, like this month, for example, or August, like, yeah, I had some good gigs and sold a ton of merch at a few of them. So I could like pay my rent and pay some of my utility bills, like with just comedy money. And those aren't like every month, but that wasn't happening at all 2 years ago, you know? So it's like, it's incrementally kind of grown. And the thing with Comedy Works is like, yeah, it's a cool opportunity. And it's really sweet to be able to work there on the weekends. And you know, be there in like front of a full room and working with them, the best comics in the world. But I really was kind of like a validation thing where it's like, yeah, the work that I'm putting in, like it's paying off instead of me just kind of like guessing and seeing how things, I'm not sure, you know, I think I'm doing okay, but it's kind of one of those little like nods, you know, it's just, that shows you that, yeah, you are like, you're putting in the work. It's, shows and we see it and we want to like reward you for that. But interestingly enough, like I'd kind of planned this year around it not happening. Like we didn't really know when they were going to do promotions again. Like they do them like a couple years apart and it's kind of random. And I had kind of planned the entire year around, like I knew I wanted to tour more. You know, I felt really great about where my 30 minutes was at and getting opportunities to like headline B rooms around Colorado and then a few other places. And I've kind of been working my ass off over the past couple of years to get to that 25 to 30, which is either like your club feature or like a B room headliner, right? Typically.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, well, let's go do it. You know, like let's go do that amount of time. So this year was really all about touring for me. So like I've been to like 7 different states that I'd never been to before this year. I'm in LA next week. I'm in Atlanta for like a week and a half at the end of the month. I'm in New Mexico in November. So the plan like hasn't changed. Like the plan for this year is like get on the road, tour, figure out if this if these jokes work in other places or if I'm just like living in a bubble and kind of tooting my own horn in like one spot and then being able to sign up for Comedy Works like when I am in town. So yeah, it's cool. I am very grateful for it. I'm very excited about it, but like, I still want to kind of, I'm at that phase in my career where I got to go, I got to get out there and like, I want to, you know, build a little bit of a name for myself and actually kind of start growing in some other places besides the one that I'm in.
So right now, I mean, obviously that work was worth it, but like right now that's just a notch on the resume. It's a credit.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's a notch on the resume. It's something I can use as a credit and mean something to people, you know, around the country. So yeah, it's very cool. I just like, I wasn't about to cancel tours that I kind of already had planned just to like stay home and maybe work the weekends, you know, because you still have to sign up. That's the thing. So there's a list of like 30 people. They're on the Comedy Works list, right? And the way that it kind of works is you have to sign up at the beginning of the week for the weekend. And then the schedule comes out on Wednesday. But you didn't, just because you signed up doesn't mean you're going to get it. So, but you have to like leave certain days open or bail on gig, like kind of last minute. Cause like, hey, sorry, I'm at the club for the weekend. And a lot of people get that, you know, around here. Cause it's a thing. Like if it may be in other areas, like people might get more annoyed about it. It'd be like, if you took a different gig the week of, right. Because it was like a better gig, like that's a little short notice, right? For somebody to like have to rebook it, unless you're just doing like a 10-minute spot or something. Cause then you're like, all right, yeah, I can find somebody else to do 10 minutes.
I would bet that on those independent shows, you're probably not doing 10 minutes.
Sometimes. I mean, there's like showcases, you know, like this is a pretty big showcase town. That's one of the things that we're very fortunate about is like, we have a lot of great comics here, man. Like I was at an open mic last night and there's 60 people on the list. And that's not everybody that I know. Like there's a lot of working comics in town that weren't at that open mic, you know? So there's a lot of people here. And because of that, people want to like book more spots, you know, like the show that I run in town, late night comedy. It's at this place called Bandit Oak Brewing, down on South Broadway in Denver. I run it like kind of showcase style. We do four spots instead of like a pro show, which is like three, you know, but really two, like if I'm hosting it, cause I don't want to like do, I think sometimes like if it's six or seven comics on the show, I don't like those as much just because I feel like you don't get any time to really get to know the comics that are on stage. And they kind of just have to, the way I operate is I basically work in chunks that all of them last at least 5 minutes, you know? So I kind of got to like pick a lane, you know? And like, I have two, if it's a 10 minute set, I kind of got to pick two different chunks that I know are going to take 10 minutes. And if one's not going that great, I have to recognize that pretty early in the chunk and be able to pivot. But I also don't want to have to pivot too many times in a 10 minute set, you know, like that's, you know, that's not a lot of time to keep like change. Like for me anyway, like keep changing subject matter.
Well, my shows are 4-person shows as well.
Yeah.
And I'll host them and then I can give the opener 15 to 20 mm-hmm. and the feature gets 20 to 25 usually. And the headliner is like 30 plus. And I found that it's so much easier to book people that way. Mm-hmm. And then the money goes a little further for those people who are coming in from out of town. So I book a lot of rooms too. So I get the flexibility to say, okay, well, I'll give you this. I'll give you that. I'll give you that. Everybody's working around town. So that helps. But yeah, I want people to get to know the comedian and I don't want the comedian to feel rushed.
Yeah.
So I'm like, ideally I will never use a light at a show because the comedians, I trust them and the show, if budgeted properly, isn't going to last much more than 90 minutes.
Yeah. So my thing is like, I understand both. It's just my personal preference. So like the reason I get the showcase thing is because there are that many comics in town, you want to like give everybody an opportunity, you know, and the best way to do that is to have a 7-person show. Everybody has 10 minutes. Run time on that is probably an hour and 20, maybe an hour and 30, assuming like nobody runs the light because that never happened before. Right. Yeah. And time in between, you know, maybe starting a little late, like whatever it is. I get that. So, and now you've given 7 different people an opportunity on a show as opposed to mine where I can only do 4. But before that, I was only doing like 2 or 3. So, and if you're booking a show, like the one I was doing, like it was a monthly, you know, that's only 12, no, it's 24 spots that you can give out in an entire year. So like, it sucks because like I do want to be able to give more people chances. Like I think I run a great room. I love my show. People ask me all the time, like, what are your favorite shows in town? Like, I hate to say this, but like mine, like I love the show. Like we have a good room. We have a very consistent, like fun crowd. I love the people that I work with over there at the brewery and it's fun. Right. And I want more people to be able to do the show. So that's why we actually just made it weekly starting in September. And I like the way I like doing four people on the show because everybody does 15. So that way it's more stage time for the people that deserve it, you know, like, so yeah, it's four spots on the show, but like, if you're not doing a showcase or you're not the headliner. So if you're not the headliner on the show, you're typically doing 10 on a show around here, maybe 15, but that's only one person on that show. And then, like I said, if you're doing the showcase, it's sevens and tens. So it was really important for me to have a show that revolves around like some of the best local comics or all the best local comics having a little bit more stage time.
I don't want to, you know, trash Albany at all, because I always thought Albany was pretty good as far as like the comedians, the talent.
Yeah.
But when you moved to Denver, did your game have to elevate just to keep up with everybody?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of just does. It does based on like, I'm getting more reps, you know, like I was doing, they said in a good week back home, you're doing three or four mics. Right. And you hope one of those that week is good. And by good, I mean, there's a crowd that you can actually like gauge these jokes off. When I moved here, I was getting on stage 8 to 10 times a week, just open mics, not a lot of shows when I first got here or whatever. And it was just that ability to just test something out that many times so quickly. Now I'm like doubling or tripling my pace in terms of figuring out what's the funny part of this joke and what's not. And you can get to it faster. So that you can't help but get better, to be honest, because you're getting so many more reps in. And yeah, I mean, it kind of forces you to step your game up a little bit instead of like, being like a hack piece of shit. You know, you actually have to like have something to say and it's got to be a good joke. We're very fortunate that we just have really awesome people, you know, to look up to here. I mean, even just in Denver, we have, you know, we have Josh Blue, we have the Growlix, which is like Adam Caton Holland, Ben Roy, Andrew Overdahl. We have John Novosad, who's done like Late Night. We have Steve Gillespie that's done Conan. We have Sam Talent, who is like one of the most popular comics in the country right now that you've never heard of. He opens for Kinane a bunch. He's done Comedy Central. We have Nancy Norton, who is like the only female winner of the Seattle Comedy Competition and the Boston Comedy Competition. We've got some like really heavy hitters that like live in this town, and yeah, you want to earn their respect and you also want to get to that level.
Yeah. I was looking around for my Sam Talent book.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Running the Light.
Yeah. So no, and I've heard only good things about Denver. For me, like Denver is not the place you think of though. Like you think of New York and you think of LA and then maybe Chicago, but like, I would think that it's got to be right there.
It is. I mean, all right, well, let's do the breakdown, right? So like New York is number one, like inarguably, right? But like New York doesn't really pay that well, right? So you trade off for that, but they have industry there. So you could have your big break there. And a lot of people do. LA is technically number two, but if you ask anybody that's actually a working comic, it is not a great place to do comedy. They don't have a lot of shows. There are clubs, but a lot of the times it's for people that are famous. Like, so if you're like not already famous, it's really hard to work. And a lot of the times people that are out there, yeah, they're doing comedy, but they really want to get a writing gig or they really want to act in something. You know, that's kind of like, yeah, they're doing comedy in LA, but they have other motivations for being in LA specifically. So then after that, I mean, it's kind of like a three-way tie, really, depending on who you ask about. Yeah, well, maybe even Atlanta, Chicago, Austin, and Denver. Right. So between those four cities, I think it's just kind of dealer's choice. I think you can go to any one of them. And I haven't spent a ton of time in Chicago. I've been to Austin a couple times. I really like Austin. And I'm doing Atlanta for the first time at the end of the month for you know, a little bit. And I'm excited about Atlanta because like I have some good friends down there. My buddy Ian Aver, he runs stuff at Laughing Skull, which is one of the big clubs down there. My buddy Joe Pettis runs a handful of brewery shows and just kind of like he's just kind of like an OG in the Atlanta scene. And they were so helpful because like my friend Bridget and I are doing a little run down there together. And we're there for a week and a half, and every single night of the week we have paid shows. Like, it's great. And that's one of the reasons why Denver is great, is because we pay people. Like, one of the things I will say about Austin that I didn't particularly care for is that there were great shows, but the pay rate was like half of what it is here. You know, so like, yeah, you're getting paid to do the shows, but it's kind of like hard to put a week together because it is a lot of showcases, not as many headlining opportunities from what I remember. So you're making $20 a show, maybe 25. It's not uncommon here for you're doing a 10-minute spot. You're getting at least $25 and sometimes 50, you know, depending on like ticket sales, depending on tips, like that kind of stuff. And I think that's one of the reasons we've developed a reputation for being one of the best comedy towns in the country. And we get a ton of people from New York, LA, Chicago that come here all the time because we pay pretty well, you know? So like people can put together a run here and actually walk out of it in the positive, you know, like you didn't lose any money.
It's weird. Like even in Binghamton or the upstate New York region, really, like I hear people not getting paid for shows. And as a producer, I'm like, I understand. Like I was not paying particularly well when it started, but I wasn't making money like at all. I would be the last person to get paid, which is a horrible way to run a business.
Yeah.
But all I had to do was start asking for budgets or building an audience and, you know, supplementing the ticket sales with tips or whatever. So now everybody who does my shows gets paid. Guest spots get paid. I don't like to give out guest spots, but they will get paid and tips. But like, I don't understand how anybody expects somebody to drive 2 hours, 3 hours, come from out of town for free. And it's like, we're not all filing taxes as a comedian. So you can't be like, okay, well, I drove 150 miles. I'll get paid for it, you know, in April.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't all wait for that. So it's frustrating to hear that a place like Austin, which is like booming, is still only paying that low.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm saying that like, it is a great comedy town. I love it there. And there's really amazing comics there. If we were going to parse out, like, you know, between what's the difference between these four places that are like that tier below New York and LA, that would just be like one of my criticisms. And it might've changed. I mean, I was supposed to go down to Austin last month or a month and a half ago, wound up having to cancel that part of the trip. And I went to Houston. So I don't know exactly what it is right now, but I don't know. I mean, just that was me just kind of like being nitpicky more than anything, but it is, yeah, it's super annoying when somebody's like clearly making money on the show, or I don't know, they didn't take the steps, like you were saying, like ask for a budget, charge for tickets, like whatever. It's like, if we're doing this, this isn't community service, dog. Like I'm trying to pay my bills with this, and I've worked my ass off to get to that point.
I worked with a couple of people before going off on my own, and I understand where they're coming from, but they're like, hey, we're not in for the money. I'm like, yeah, but at a certain point,
you've got to
make money doing it to justify. I mean, if only to pay for your printing costs. Now, the people I was working with, they weren't paying any of the bills. I was. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, yeah, for you, you don't need to make any money. I'm losing money. And it's like, you can't really sustain it that way. So,
yeah, I mean, it's listen, comedy can be fun, right? It can just be like a fun thing to do. But if you're going to ask other people to be on your show, you got to pay them first and foremost. And second of all, if you want to just be kind of a part timer, like that's fine. But get out of the way of the rest of us and don't make life worse for us by like not charging tickets for a show and like not paying comics, right? And just kind of letting a venue walk all over you and like offering to do a show for like less money because you can, or you're willing to undercut another comic that was producing it because you're like, well, I can do it cheaper, but then you don't have the same connections that comic does because that's why you undercut them. And because you're like, you aren't getting gigs on your own, right? So you have to go and like produce a show so that you can get booked. And then now you're just booking your friends who are just not as funny as the connections as the other person had. So now people are going to a bad show, and it's not great for anybody, but like, that would be all I would say about it. It's like, take it seriously or don't. And you don't, even if you don't want to take being a comic seriously, take the producing side seriously, right? Like I have great friends that like, they're okay comics, but they're great producers. Like they're really great at it. So they kind of focus on that a little bit more.
See, I think like if you want to dabble in comedy, be a comedian, there's plenty of room. But I think if you are dabbling in the producing side, get the fuck out, because that's not fair to everybody else. I get territorial. Like, I'm cool if you set up a show in Binghamton. I really am. I'm jealous that I didn't get that room. And, you know, I'll be a little salty about it. But what I am most fearful of is that somebody who isn't proficient at it will grab a room and then book a bad show or get a bad budget. And then kind of, like you said, undercut me. And then, oh, do I have to go down to him eventually? Or is that room going to go away? And comedy is never going to happen there again after two or three piss poor shows. Mm-hmm. Like, because when I started booking in Binghamton, I had to apologize for previous bookers who treated that bar like shit and who, you know, they were bad to the waitresses. They broke toilets or something like that. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not an asshole. So like, that's where I get nervous as a producer.
Yeah, like, well, I get that, especially for you guys being in like a smaller scene. You know, Binghamton is not that big of a town, right? So if comedy night was like, you know, they only have, maybe people only have one comedy night in them for the month, or some of them anyway, they already went to one and it was a bad one. You know, they might be less likely to go out again. That's speculative, right? We don't know that for sure. But like, maybe the appetite isn't as big for comedy, like for it to have like a ton of shows, right? Like, but no, there's one really good one. It's like, I don't know how often you're on it, but it's like monthly. We know it's going to be great. So if now all of a sudden, like we've gotten like one of the, it can, a blessing and a curse sometimes in Denver is like on a Friday or Saturday night between all the clubs and all the independent shows, there's 10 or 12 different comedy shows that you can go to in Denver. Yeah. It's like, it's pretty insane. But it's because we have a population that can support it, right? So if like you're a smaller town, you might not have the population density to consistently have, like if you had a comedy show every week, that might be hard, right? Like, I don't know if you're doing that, but it's like, is that the schedule that you're kind of on?
So for a lot of the rooms I have, they're set on monthly schedules. Like it'll be the last Thursday of the month or first Wednesday, whatever.
Yeah, but you like move it around.
Yeah, and I try very hard not to reuse the same comedian in that room for a year, and I'm able to do it. The problem is, well, not a problem, but one room is going weekly in October, and I'm very I'm excited for it. Mm-hmm. I'm nervous as well, but it should do well because it's a smaller town and the people have been really supporting the room. But it's a trial basis. We got 3 months, and if it doesn't work in 3 months, we'll go back to once a month.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where we're at with my show. Like, we've been doing it monthly, and it's been consistently a great show. And we just did our one-year anniversary for the show last month, which was pretty exciting. So the owner of the brewery and I just got to talking about it, and they're like, well, is there anything else that we can do to kind of keep improving the show? And I was like, we could probably do it more often, just so that way we can continue to build some consistency. People know that this is a place that they can see comedy every Friday. We already do have a lot of regulars that come back to the show, but you know, I'm also thinking to myself, like, not only is it more of an opportunity for me to give other comics from out of town or locally more stage time, you know, I'm trying not to work at my day job as much anymore, man. Like, I'm also trying to like phase out like working for somebody else and just literally working for myself, whether that's a combination of like my own stand-up gigs, producing shows, podcasting, social media, like whatever avenue can help me get to that like a little bit faster, I'm on board for it. So I would be lying if I didn't say part of it was because of like, you know, a little extra revenue coming in every month that isn't coming from my day job specifically. So, I mean, I wanted to build up some consistency, wanted to have a little bit more money coming in, wanted more stage time for other comics, but I'm a little scared too, man. Like, we're doing it, the first one's Friday and we're doing it weekly and we're going to give it a shot for 2 months and we'll see, you know, that's all we can do.
Yeah. Thankfully, like the guy I'm working with is like, hey, no pressure. But I'm like, no, I'm going to feel pressure because I want this to succeed. Like anything I do, I want it to go really well. So I don't have to admit failure and go backward.
Correct.
So what's your goal? I mean, your comedy goal, like obviously you want to work your day job less. You want to not depend on that money, but you're 5 years in, 6 years in, close there. What do you want? Like, what's your short-term goal?
So short-term goal, like I said, for this year, it was to be on the road as much as possible. And like I said, I think I've honestly like accomplished that. Like I've been just in this year, I've been to Alaska, Oregon, Minnesota, Nebraska, and I have three more new cities coming up in the next like 2 months. So that's going to give me like 7 or 8 like new places that I'd never done comedy before that I now can like put into like a regular rotation of like places I can go back to. I can start setting up tours like around those places. So that was kind of the big one for this year. I think next year, the plan is to, it's already kind of in the works right now. I want to start taking Interrogation on the road more because it's been a really fun show. We did it for the first time on the road down in Houston. When I was down there, my buddy Andrew Youngblood, who's a great comic, he runs a secret group, which is kind of like the indie club down there. So I pitched him on doing the show on like an off night for them, and he was down, and it went great. I was so blown away and grateful for like how awesome the show went, because I'm nervous. It's the first time we're doing it out of town, and we had like 40 people come out on a Wednesday for a show that they had no context of, had never seen before, and they all had a great time. And it's a unique show, so like they're going to remember it. And it gave me a lot of faith in like, I can go do this in other places. And it's nice to be able to have something to offer a town that you're visiting as opposed to just taking, right? Like, so when I'm going to a city, yeah, I want to do everybody's shows, but I'm like, I also have a show that I can book local comics on. And it's something unique. It's different. It's not stand up. So that way it's like not, you know, potentially it's not stepping on anybody's toes, maybe for a night of the week or something like that. Then after that, it's Interrogation Podcast is what I just started it up, and we've got a few episodes in the can, and I'm going to be releasing like, I wanted to have like 6 or 8 recorded so that I could be like 6 to 8 weeks ahead of scheduling and stuff.
That's your plan.
Yeah. So I'm working on that right now, and that's been a lot of fun. And we basically just like, I find dumb crimes on the internet, and then comics and I riff about the story themselves. And then we kind of do what we do with the live show, where we each tell like crime stories, we goof around about it. And then one of the interesting things about the live show and the podcast that tends to be the most fun is we actually like put my phone number up on a TV at the show, and we have audience members like text in their crimes that they want to confess to, and we like read them on stage. So I have like a backlog of like all these dumb crimes that people have committed in my phone. So we'll read some of those. Obviously, I keep it anonymous, so like there's no phone numbers or names or anything, but we just goof off about those for a bit. And then the last thing is I want to start focusing more on social media. Like, I know that it's important, and I've started dedicating one night a week. Is there's no more, you're not going out that night. You're not going nights. You're not going out. Like, you're not doing anything. You're staying in for the night, and you're making clips, and you're editing podcast episodes, and you're getting clips from the live show to post on Instagram and TikTok and all that stuff. It's just the reality of the world that we live in now. And no matter how much I want to fight it or act like it doesn't matter, it does. You know, I still want to keep working on jokes, still want to keep working on material, but I need to get my followers up, dude. Like, I do. Like, I do okay. But I have friends that, you know, they have millions of followers, hundreds of thousands of followers, you know, and people care about that stuff. Like, I know, like, this doesn't seem like much, but when I was in Minneapolis, I had a couple people like come up to me after a show, and we were just talking, kind of like they already knew me. And I was like, do I know you guys from somewhere? And they're like, oh, we follow you on TikTok.
No kidding.
I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, I should probably pay more attention to this. And then after focusing on those things, really the goal, man, I just want to live off of comedy money. I've never needed a lot of money. I've never lived like a very lavish life. I just want to have enough money to like pay my bills, be able to save a little. I'd like to be able to buy a house one day and just have some fun money. And then like, just with stuff that I'm working on, that I'm responsible for. That's what I want.
Right. And then the next time your mom comes to a show, she'll pay attention. Mm-hmm. And she won't talk to anybody else. Mm-hmm. Everything will be perfect.
Yeah, she's great about it. Yeah, she's awesome. And one little anecdote that I will say is that, so they're very supportive about coming to my shows, my brothers, my aunts, uncles, cousins, like every time I'm back, everybody comes out to it, like at least one show. There was the first like club weekend I ever did at Syracuse. I forget the comic's name, but he did like a kind of dirty set, not like super dirty. But my mom after the show was like, I can't believe how dirty that guy was. I just don't know why you have to be that filthy. After every single one of my shows that she has ever seen, She brings that guy up even after I do 8 minutes about eating ass. Like, she still says, she's like, you know, I thought you were the best one up there, but I just don't understand why some guys have to be so filthy. Do you remember that one guy at this in Syracuse? And I'm like, yeah, mom, I remember. Were you not paying attention like at all up there? Like, I sell merch around this bit.
Was it a local guy?
No.
Oh, damn it. I really wanted to know.
No.
All right. Well, fair enough. Well, man, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate the time. Do you have anything to plug? You want to plug your social media?
Yeah, man. So it's at Fake Corey David with a K on Instagram and TikTok. If you want to check out the podcast or you want to see some, because I'm going to be posting clips from the live shows for Interrogation. It's at Interrogation True Crime on Instagram and TikTok. And then you can go to CoreyDavid.com. It's got all of my, I just updated it with all of my tour dates from now until basically the end of October. So I'm mostly focusing on, like I said, the Southeast and California and then like the Southwest a little bit for the rest of the year. But yeah, I'd love to have you come out to a show. If I'm back in upstate, I'll let everybody know, and be awesome to work with you when I'm up there too, man.
Yeah, let me know. Give me some notice. And because I usually work 2 or 3 months ahead. But yeah, next time you know you're in town, as soon as you can, let me know and we'll work something out.
Yeah, man. Sounds great. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, man. All right. Thanks so much, and I'll talk to you in a bit.
All right. Later, bud. I'm peeling back my sunburnt skin. I'll wait outside your bedroom. I hope they let me in.